Welcome to another edition of Kyle and Patrick's still unnamed podcast featuring your hosts. I'm Patrick McEwen along with Kyle Devitt.
How's it going, everyone?
We're back on Thursday recording another podcast. First, before we really get into things, I just wanted to give a quick shout-out to the Hampton lacrosse team, who announced their first Division I recruiting class yesterday on Twitter. So it's always a cool moment for the growth of the sport to see them bringing in their first crop of Division I recruits.
Yeah, and I'm glad it got a lot of media attention as well. I think it's a great thing to grow the sport, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Just a big milestone for them. They've already played games, but this was, I feel like it's another step sort of on the path to being a real, you know, to being a competitive Division I team is to bring in your first Division I recruits. The big topic that we missed last week when we didn't record the podcast was the whole Utah Division I announcement situation. I want to say fiasco, but
I don't think we're allowed to say fiasco. You can't say fiasco.
Why?
I don't think that's allowed.
Why not?
I don't know. I think it's a fiasco in the way that it got, like, covered.
Oh, yeah, I think when I say fiasco, I don't mean the team. I mean the announcement and the reaction entirely.
Oh, well, that's fair.
Yeah, I think the coverage and the people not knowing what was going on, that was the fiasco element of it. It has nothing to do not predicting that the team this year or the process to Division I will end up being a fiasco. But kind of the approach that I wanted to take was, we'll just, rather than recapping that, I just want to talk about where purely the situation that exists right now and kind of thoughts on that, not trying to recap the process of how we got here.
Okay.
So basically we have a situation where Utah has donors have stepped up and provided them with a bunch of money to, in the short run, improve their club team by bringing in Brian Holman, Marcus Holman, and Will Manny, among other, and I think they're going to add one more coach, defensive guy to round out the staff there. But to really ramp up the club team, they've brought in a couple of big-time Division I caliber recruits to ramp up the club team as part of a plan that they hope will result in taking them to Division I. Is that fair? Anything else that I'm missing?
I think that's pretty fair. I think the quote-unquote fiasco comes when you address how all of this information was disseminated to the general public, right? That's kind of where we're kind of gray, shall we say.
And I think as a result, people's understanding of what is going on in that situation has suffered. Just kind of want to take this approach rather than recapping that mess, just to talk about where they are.
Sure.
And so I think the confusion that resulted from reports that it was confirmed that they're going D1. And I think, as far as I understand it, that is not the case. It's not confirmed that they're going D1. It's the case that they have a plan that the people involved believe will result in them going D1.
Well, I mean, the university itself outright denounced that there were plans to go D1 and said that they, not only were they not going D1 with the lacrosse program, that they have no plans to add any future sports to the school. Right.
Right, but I think there's a reasonable, when you say a plan, I think that means, like, in my mind, that means there's no confirmed plan.
Well, there's no official plan. I could say I'm, you know, planning to run for president in 2020 with Kanye, but it doesn't mean that it's going to happen, right?
Right, right. No, I think but I just say, like, for example, the Cleveland State Athletic Department would say right now they have a plan to field a Division I team for the 2018 season.
Yes, officially. Correct.
Right, because they, you know, have hired a coach, they have recruits coming in. They're not going to play any games this coming spring in 2017, but there's a plan in place. And it doesn't mean maybe something will, there's an outside chance something will go wrong, they'll have to cancel it. Maybe they theoretically might not end up playing any games in 2018, who knows? But there is an official plan in place right now.
Right, and I think the other thing to look at too is, we're talking about an MCLA team going D1, which you know, I know your experience with Michigan informs this. I actually have had the opposite experience of a Division I program here in New Hampshire going MCLA, and that's UNH. That happened, God, like a long time ago, like maybe almost 20 years ago now. And it was a pretty sobering experience for, you know, New Hampshire lacrosse in general. Like, having a D1 team in your state is a big deal, especially if it's, you know, such a luminous and an important institution like Utah is for Utah and New Hampshire is UNH is for New Hampshire. So I think that's an interesting aspect to this that would lend itself to eventually becoming true. But like, again, we don't know. Plans are plans, but nothing's final until it's final. Until you slap me in the face, you haven't slapped me yet. You know what I mean?
Right. No, and I think that's also kind of the issue with the confusion with the reporting is that when you say that it's confirmed that a team is going to Division One, you're not so much making a prediction about the future as you are reporting about a decision that's been made in the present.
Right.
By the athletic department. And so that's not the case. And so I think it's a situation where there, I mean, I would like, I'd say I'm cautiously optimistic that I think I would hope and I admit, you know, that they will be Division One sooner rather than later. But I think that doesn't have so much bearing on the facts of the current situation right now.
If wishes were fishes, we'd all cast nets.
No, exactly. I think as you saw John Paul, the Michigan coach's comments about it, but I thought it was he made a very good point that there are a lot of Division I coaches, or there are a lot of club coaches who are hoping to take their teams Division I soon, but unfortunately they're not the ones who get to make that decision.
Right. Right.
I think the other aspect that I think is interesting about this case, situation two, is that because, I mean, the Holmans and Wilmany didn't go out there for free. That somebody, right. there's donors with substantial money involved. And so they're the ones who are, they're the bosses in this situation.
Right. It's like coaching a club team, you know, like you are being paid by all these parents and you're getting paid like a decent amount of money. But at the end of the day, the parents are the ones that kind of control what's happening with you, right? Whereas when you're working for an institution, let's say, it's a lot more than just one person being involved in the decision of how well you're doing, you know?
Yeah, exactly. No, I think it's just important to keep in mind, and everything that we're hearing about this process thus far has come from the Utah club team and not the Utah athletic department. And that club team has been the substantial beneficiaries of lots of money and donations from donors.
Sure.
So
definitely worth noting.
Yeah. Not to say that they're saying isn't true or anything, but it's just, you know, it's just something to keep in mind as we observe this process over the next couple of years. But
and with that, we move on.
Right, because I was going to say, best of luck fired. To everyone involved with Utah, to the yeah. you know, the Holmans and Wilmany. I hope that you guys do succeed in turning that into a Division I program.
Fun fact about Marcus Holman, the Ohio Machine facility that the team that he plays for in the MLL is so close to the airport that one day during practice he tried to hit an airplane with a ball flying overhead, which I thought was funny.
So. I did see that. I saw him tweet that back at you.
It's pretty great.
Was rather amusing.
So I like me some Marcus Holman. I like me some Wilmany. So I wish them the best of luck, always.
I would concur with that. I like both of them. Next thing we're going to talk about, we'll let you kind of introduce this as was one of your controversial tweets about the U19 World Championships.
Yeah, this was really misinterpreted, tweet fam. Like, we have to have a talk, and this is our talk. I tweeted that I don't care. And I said hot take, so it's my fault. And it's probably because I put that in front of it that this happened. Hot take, I don't care about the U19 championships. It's not that I don't think it has any value or I hate it or even that I dislike it in any way, shape, or form. It's not a form of lacrosse snobbery. Okay, I said I have other things. You know, I'm an MLL guy. There's two people that work for Inside Lacrosse that generate MLL content. It's me and Chris Rosenthal. Okay, we have to watch all the games. It's a lot of games, man. It's a lot of games. That's a lot of hours. And we're also doing recruiting events with Inside Lacrosse, and I'm at all of those as well. So it's not that I don't care about it as something with value. It's that I ain't got time for it. I have no time for the unit. I have no time for China versus Scotland. I have just as like I don't have time for USA versus Canada. When that game was being played, I was in the middle of a triple header live MLL game. The USA-Canada gold medal game. The only thing I saw of that game was the 8-second clip where I can't even see the ball and apparently USA scores. And, you know, USA, USA, USA all the way. It was awesome. It was great. But there's just different ways that people are taking that, and everyone needs to just kind of settle down a little bit. I know it's like weird for me to be like, yo, settle down, but we all have different responsibilities as it comes to lacrosse. And one of the things that really, you know, made me mad, which, you know, it's not super hard to make me mad, but one of the things someone said really angered me. I want to use another word, but it really angered me. It was like, wow, lacrosse snob, way to grow the game. Let me tell you something. And I'm not going to even use your Twitter name, but you're listening to this. Let me tell you something. I didn't spend 12 years sleeping on my friends' couches and killing rats and attics of old ladies' houses as an assistant coach at D3 and D2 to be told by someone that I don't do anything to grow the game. This is my life. I love this. I love lacrosse. I love talking about it. I love writing about it. I love working for Inside Lacrosse. It's like everything I ever wanted. But for someone to be like, you don't do anything to grow the game, or you're not growing the game because you don't watch U19, is ridiculous. And I found it offensive. And I'm sure that's funny to a lot of you because I offend the crap out of a lot of people. But to me, that like, this is my soapbox moment. I didn't like that. And I actually appreciate all of our colleagues at Inside Lacrosse. Jeff Shannon, Zach Babbo went all the way to Coquitlam, okay? Flew all the way out there and covered everything. Did photos, did video, did interviews, wrote pieces. Like, you don't need me to do it. Like, you have all these other people. I don't have to care about it. That's the beauty of the coverage of lacrosse, is we are big enough and we are nuanced enough to send people that have specialties to the places they need to be. So I'm really excited going forward with the MLL and, you know, our recruiting events. That I don't need to be excited about U19 because we have great professionals doing their jobs better than I ever could. And that's it. That's my soapbox. We'll probably get cut. I don't care. That's
how I feel. No, we need to make that into a drop for the future, that we have professionals doing their job better than I ever could.
That's right. I have no problem saying Zach Babbo shoots better video, or Jeff Shannon writes better features about U19 players. Like, I'm not gonna.
No, I just think I just think it will be funny in the future to quote you out of context.
Yes. Make sure to cut that. We'll put that at the beginning of the podcast. People
will
love it.
That's more what I was referencing, is that in the future, out of context, it potentially will be amusing. But I did watch all of the U.S., Canada, Iroquois U19 games as I was doing the highlights. Was one of those video people that does a better job than Kyle can, that he referenced. And I think there's a lot of interesting stuff to comment about it, but a lot of it has already been covered. I talked about it for like an hour last week with Dylan Ward, and Jeff wrote a bunch about it. Teddy Jenner wrote some stuff about it. But the one thing that hasn't been addressed that I did want to mention on this podcast, there's a lot of people who were leaving comments in various places or on the game comparing, and I think it's an understandable that makes you think that, but comparing Teoka Nanacoke to Lyle Thompson. And I got into a little bit of myself on Twitter that people, I guess, people interpreted it the way they did, where I said that if you're going to compare him to anyone, to a Thompson, I think the better comparison is to Miles for a lot of different reasons. But before we get into that, I just want to say, I think that comparing anybody to Lyle Thompson at this point is unfair to that person. And I think it's unfair to Lyle that he's the greatest scorer in the history of Division I lacrosse. He's 400 points. He scored nearly 50 more points than Rob Pinnell in fewer games. So, no matter how good of a high school player you are, I think to put the expectations of that type of comparison onto somebody just isn't fair. Secondly, I don't think necessarily saying that somebody is like the next Lyle Thompson or Lyle Thompson 2.0, that every player's game is unique. And so I think, to a certain extent, looking at it from that perspective, it hurts you from critically analyzing what exactly makes a player who they are. But the big thing I think that to explain sort of why I think he's a better Lyle Thompson comparison, is first of all, I think Teo Kananikoke is a guy who's sort of a dual on-ball, off-ball threat, that with the ball as a Dodger, he can score, and I think with off the ball, cutting inside, you know, getting open as a step-down shooter, I think he's a great player in that respect. And Lyle, not that he couldn't score off ball, but he very much was a ball carrier, and he was at his best with the ball in his stick dodging. And I don't necessarily think the same thing can be said true of Nanikoke. And I think that's why Miles Thompson's a little bit better fit, because I looked at Miles Thompson as sort of that dual threat. That's what made him so good at Albany, was the dual threat of being a Dodger with the ball, able to score and feed when necessary, but also was a tremendous off-ball cutter working off of Lyle without the ball, either inside, coming around from X, that sort of thing. And I see some parallels to Nanikoke in that respect. Right. Also, did you just say something?
No, not at all. I think it's good. I think one of the things people get caught up in when you do analysis of a player, regardless of their level, they always ask for a comparison. Like, what's he like? What's he like? I mean, that's how recruiting is too. Like, what's this guy like? Is he comparable to a guy that's on our team? You know, when a coach talks to another coach. And I think that's kind of natural. But I think your point remains that each player is unique. And I think the similarities with players come a lot from body type and speed and size and not necessarily actual game analysis. So I think, you know, putting some actual analysis into it and saying he's not like Lyle because of X, Y, and Z is a little more nuanced than someone that's like, oh, he's like Lyle Thompson.
Right? Oh yeah. Well, I think it's easy just to, he's a right-handed attackman who plays for the Iroquois and has a braid. You know, when you see that, it's obvious that the first thought is Lyle Thompson. But
I give people a little more credit than that. But if that's how people think and talk, like, what are we doing?
I mean, I'm just saying, not when you just first see him on the field, though. You know, it's like Lyle Thompson is the most iconic player who fits that description,
I suppose. I mean, I've only seen highlights, so I can't speak to his actual comparison, to be honest with you.
You know, and anyways, it's, I think, as you were talking about body type and speed, he's a little bit shorter and thicker than Lyle. When I think he leans in as a Dodger, whereas Lyle was physical, but he didn't necessarily back people down so much as he just was able to lean into them and then could kind of step away, or he kind of was kind of slippery rolling off of you from that contact to get around you.
Right.
Which I think is another difference between the two of them. And I think Miles was a little bit more of an actual back you down kind of physical Dodger than Lyle was. He's a little bit bigger as well. So that's just my two cents in the comparison, wanted to explain it. And I agree what you're saying. I think there's a difference though between saying that he reminds me of somebody and saying that he's the next, or he's, you know, this person, this player 2.0.
Right.
Or it's just, that's comparing, fair. Saying, like, you know, he finishes like somebody or he dodges like somebody. If you're comparing a specific element of somebody's game, I think it's different than just saying in everything they do, they're exactly like this other player.
Sure. Because the latter part of that statement is just lazy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, and too, just like with when you, you know, you can put qualifiers on and say, he reminds me of, you know, this person with these changes or something like that. I prefer that sort of analysis.
Okay.
But no, that was U19. The championship game was tremendous. I mean, the U.S. was down 8-2 at halftime. You definitely missed a good one. Coming back in the second half, despite the slower international play with no shot clock and having to keep it in a box that is huge and goes from sideline to sideline, which for the good teams is pretty easy to do. It doesn't really restrict your offense that much. But despite that, it was an incredible game to watch, and I for a while was thinking, what do European soccer countries do when they like have a disappointing World Cup and they have to tear down their national team and fire everybody and start over?
They just become England, right?
Isn't that, yeah, what England does, I guess, every tournament? I guess, because I felt like had we lost this game, that would have been three World Championships in a row that we had lost to Canada, and I don't know. It's at a certain point. I'm not sure what the... It's difficult to pinpoint a problem, but I feel like U.S. lacrosse was bordering on that type of crisis moment.
That's a fair statement. I don't know if I'm comfortable agreeing with that or not agreeing with that, because, as I said, I am not an expert on the nationalities here.
Yeah,
I just know USA. That's all I know.
Yeah, yeah. I just mean, I think with the U.S., not that we shouldn't ever lose to Canada, but I think losing to Canada three times in a row and having them hold four of the five, be the defending champions in four of the five international tournaments would just be...
We should lose to Canada in hockey, and that's it.
No, we should lose to them in indoor.
No.
In box lacrosse?
I don't buy it. I think we should win that now. I just think we can't catch up in hockey, but I think in indoor we can. It'll happen eventually. We have a lot of players playing in Can-Am. We'll be fine.
We're definitely closing the gap. I'm just not sure to say that we should beat them is a little. We'll have to see.
You're not much of a patriot today, Patrick.
I would love to be a patriot. That's the one at this point, though. They should expect to win it is not.
Come on, man. America, the Olympics are coming.
We have to win everything.
We win everything.
Anything that the U.S. doesn't win at is a travesty, and we need to fire people and start over and rethink how we train people in that sport.
It's not even a sport if the U.S. doesn't win.
That sounds like a good American.
Yes, xenophobia at its finest.
Event is not a sport. Anyways, though, we have a lot of MLL subjects.
So much to
cover. And I think do you want to do chronological order or the one you're most psyched about first?
Let's do the one I'm most psyched about so I can taper off, because I can't end the podcast all fired up.
Okay.
So today is Thursday, July 21st. And this morning, I got a text, can't say from who, from someone affiliated with Major League Lacrosse in some capacity, that John Tucker was fired by the Blaze. And it's kind of like, well, why did you do that now? And honestly, so there's a couple ways to look at this. The first way is, of course that happened, because everyone in Atlanta is crazy, and Atlanta is way worse than we know it is, which I actually agree with. Or you could be like, well, they played like crap against Denver this past weekend, which is also true, and gave away the game. I wouldn't say they gave away the game, but when you're playing 6-on-6 and no one's behind the cage and you never back up any shots, you're kind of giving away the game. You know what I mean? The absence of Kevin Rice was so apparent. The absence of Matt McCready's was also so apparent. The inability of any Blaze midfielder to get off their shot in a timely manner or not run into their own players was also apparent. It was like Florida from the first 6 weeks of the season swapped jerseys with the Blaze. It was that bad. That being said, it was still pretty even going into it, because Denver is also not an amazing team right now. But Denver ended up crushing them 18-11. It was not close by the third quarter. Something had to be done. I don't know if firing John Tucker is the best answer for what you're doing. His kid's on the team. You know, you basically poached him away from Boston for more money to build your team. You know, like, what are you doing? And, you know, the same question was asked when they traded Miles Jones for, you know, what people still see as, you know, two nickels for a quarter, you know. So you're looking at the Blaze franchise as, how in trouble are you? And I think they're in big trouble, man. I think this is just another, this is the cementing move that's just like, something bad is happening in Atlanta. And I think it's really troublesome to have an expansion team do all of this craziness and not even finish the year yet. Like, who knows what's going to happen now? You know, I mean,
okay, wait a second, before we get too far, no, I just wanted to take it back. When you talk about them not having anybody at X, that was always Kevin Rice before. And so when he went down, he's out for the season now with a knee injury. It's kind of logical that they have issues with that. And also, as you know, a growing sort of an expansion team who's trying to put their roster to compete right away, it makes sense that they don't bother to invest in the depth of having a backup for the one spot on the field, or for one of the spots on the field where they have, like, they have a player who's as good as he gets.
I mean, that's definitely fair, and that's a good point. Unfortunately, like, it's also part of tactical awareness to have someone stand at, you know, behind the net to back shots up. And in that capacity, I think anyone on that bench could have fulfilled that. Justin Pennington could have gone and played X. You know what I mean? Like, intelligent lacrosse players would back up the shot.
No, I mean, that makes – I've had issues with seventh grade teams that I've coached where we didn't have – where we had struggles with that. But yeah, for an MLL team, it doesn't excuse it, but I just think it's important to put that in context.
Right, and that's totally fair.
As for why that was an issue that they had. Is this the kind of thing that's going to make them regret having traded Miles Jones?
I think it's...
Was that a John Tucker move? And now that he's gone, whoever's going to come in would have much rather had Miles Jones?
I have heard rumblings that Tucker didn't want to draft Jones after the fact. I did not hear it at the draft. So those could be, you know, hindsight rumblings of, like, someone sowing the seeds of something like this happening. Just to be clear, I don't know if I believe it or not, but I have heard it. And I think this is indicative of a larger problem. You know, you're an expansion franchise. Yes, in the MLL, expansion franchises have come in and been immediate players. The Outlaws were an expansion franchise. The Hounds were an expansion franchise and made it to the, you know, the finals in their first year. You have to look at expectation. If your expectation is to get to the playoffs in year one and you've never run a team before, you need to be smarter. You need to, like, understand that that's very rare in all sports and even lacrosse. Even if you have the best personnel, that's not going to work out. You know,
is this a case of unfair expectations? Is it a case of a meddling owner, like people talk about other sports, like a Dan Snyder with the Redskins, or Vivek, whatever his last name is, with the Sacramento
Yes.
Kings?
I think it's both those things, and I think it's unrealistic, and I think it's unfair. The MLL team. Let me just put this out there: an MLL team is not a toy. It's not a toy. I know, like, people think it is, and it's not, it's, you know, it's, people like to joke about it or whatever. It's not a toy. These are people that actually, like, play sports for the right reasons. You know, they play lacrosse for the right reason. You know, they're good at it. They enjoy it. They sacrifice for it. You pay them a pittance and you expect a championship for your pittance. Like, sorry, that's not how it works. And that's not how it ever should work. There have been owners that, by the way, that have come in the league and acted like this and not lasted long, to be honest. So we'll see what happens here, but I think there's definitely needs to be some reality checks down in Atlanta for sure going forward.
Okay, going back, since we didn't do a podcast last week, one of the things that we didn't talk about was the All-Star game.
Oh, boy.
And more so than talking about the game itself, I just wanted, there's two topics that I wanted to touch on with regards to it. Number one, thoughts on that. One of the most discussed things last year was the halftime show.
Yes.
So what were your thoughts on what they did at halftime this year?
I mean, they just did a canned package, right? Like, who cares? That's better than watching kids roll a ball around, right?
Okay. No, that was my thought but I think the weird thing for me was that They paid Kid Ink a bunch of money to perform at halftime.
Right.
And then they didn't show it. Which I thought was a bit confused about that.
I mean,
that what was...
You're confused that they didn't show anything?
What was the point of having him there if you weren't going to show any of it on TV?
Promotional oomph, perhaps? In an effort to get more people to go?
I don't know. Was that confusing to you too, though?
Well, here's the thing. The All-Star game, nothing really surprises me. You know, I'm happy that they showed what they showed. They showed a great, by the way, not a good, a great compilation of goals. you know, the top 10 goals. That was no joke. That was really well done. We're talking ESPN level, you know, ability there. That was probably one of the best produced things I've seen from LSN and the league all year, to be honest. So I didn't hate it for that reason. As to your point of not showing the headliner, I'm not surprised. I'm not disappointed. I'm not like a Kid Ink stan. Know what I mean? I'm not. I don't care. Like, it's not like they're showing my favorite band up there and I missed it.
Right, so, right. No, that's fair. And so then that gets into the second thing that I wanted to talk about. And I think it relates to Kid Ink coming to perform, is that this was, I went back on Point Streak and looked at the All-Star Game attendance back to, the numbers go back to 2007 that they have available, and this was far and away the worst attended All-Star Game of the last 10 years.
Yes.
And so, to me, I thought the whole point of Kid Ink was to attract people to show up to the game who might not otherwise want to come. And you're testing out LA as an exploratory market. So those are my thoughts, is that pairing, I think as the Alex M tour found out, pairing music and lacrosse as a way to get people to show up is maybe not such a good idea. And secondly, this, I think, illustrates that Southern California is probably not a good expansion market for the MLL.
Well, they've already been there, and it's already failed. So why'd you go back? What changed?
That's a decent question. When did they? Was it the LA Riptide?
LA Riptide and San Francisco Dragons, I believe.
Right, but I mean, Northern California and Southern California right. are different, completely sure. different markets.
I think just where they had it probably hamstrung them. I mean, one of the reasons I didn't go is because I looked into flights and I looked into hotels and I was like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to spend a grand of anyone's money to go to Fullerton, California to watch the All-Star game. You know what I mean? Like it didn't seem, you know, and if it's my job, and if I don't want to go to my boss and say, hey, can we drop a G to let me go fly across the country and go see the All-Star game? Of course I would go do it. No questions asked. I wanted to go. But that's too much money to ask of someone whose job it is to go watch the game. How hard is it to get someone from away, any other part of the country, to go spend a somewhat comparable amount or even half that much to go see that game? You know, it's an All-Star game at the end of the day, and it's one of the only games all season you're going to see on TV. So I think that actually lowers the demand, first of all, because it is broadcast. It's the first game this season that's been broadcast on a national network that isn't, you know, a streaming service. So I think that was probably something they underestimated. And also, I just think it's too expensive to have it in a market like that. Houston drew like 10,000 last year, something like that. I've heard this game was reported to what, 4,200 or something like that? It's not true.
Yes, it was 4,200 this year. Last year was 10,084. 2014 in Harvard was 10,300. 13 in Charlotte was 61, almost 6,200. 2012 in Florida Atlantic was 7,800. Then you had a run. Harvard 2 years before that did better than 11,000. Mile High in 08 and 09 had better than 10,000 people. And Harvard in 2007 had better than 9,500.
If there were over 4,000 people at this last All-Star game, I am the Queen of England.
I mean, presumably that's tickets sold and not actual attendance.
It's from people that were there. I'm not going to say who. People that were there, they might have been playing in the game. I might have talked to them privately. They might have been wearing a jersey. The estimate I heard was about 1,000 people. So that's not good. And I think that's way below 4,000, by the way, is 1,000. Whether or not that's 100% true or if it's an exaggeration, there's still a lot of people.
Yeah, it's just somebody estimating. It's just somebody looking up into the stands and estimating. So
either way, it's not enough people. It was a failure. And if the league doesn't own it as a failure and wants to spin it as a success, they're lying. I think it was a failure. I think it was a failure for a lot of reasons. But that doesn't mean that, you know, the thought wasn't right. You know, and when they do all-star games like this, they do the they're going to do a semifinal in Minnesota. It is a test. They're all tests. And the MLB will lose money on a lot of these tests. I think the market was clear in Houston that they could support a team in Texas, at least, if not, you know, Houston or Dallas, you know, Austin, somewhere in between there, could support a team.
Right.
But they have to try and see who comes to see if that works. You know, put up or shut up. And there was going to be a Texas team, by the way. We were going to have 10 teams this year, and it didn't happen because of financial reasons, not because of anything else. You know, financials fell apart at the last minute, and it was scrapped. But it would make a lot more sense if we had 10 teams in the MLL, right? Like, this 9-game schedule is ridiculous, but it's not like they didn't have a test to push it forward to get investors. And now I think, you know, you can pass a test or you can fail a test. And this All-Star Game in California is a clear failure by the league.
Oh, yeah, and I think one thing I've always thought, too, about doing this with putting the All-Star Games and the Championship Game and everywhere else in new markets, it's nice because, as you talk about it, it's a test of the market to see if they can support a team. It gives you a good idea of if they're going to be able to support a team. But also, I think, and especially I think this is true of the semifinal games, you also then deny your existing fan base as sort of a reward for supporting a team.
Right.
That especially with the semifinal games where if you're a fan and you've come out and support your team all year and they've done well, they've been successful, then you don't get to see them in the playoffs.
Right.
And I think when you look at we just concluded the NBA finals, that getting to host those finals games was a huge reward for, you know, the Cleveland and Golden State fan bases.
Yeah, I think the difference being that there's in the MLL, you're still in a embryonic period almost, you know, in terms of the sport. Like, you're still a baby trying to walk around and not smash your head into a table.
No. I think certainly, I just think there's a balance where you have the sort of four marquee games. You have the All-Star game and then three playoff games. And I think it's a little bit this year that none of those are going to go to sort of reward any of the and grow and also to grow the existing fan bases. Because I don't think any of the teams are at the point with attendance where you can say, yeah, we don't need any more people to show up to these games.
Yeah, that's true. I'll 100% with that. I think to your point, if Rochester, Boston, or New York make the playoffs, you know, those fan bases will travel to Fairfield. I think that's reasonable. I think that's why they have that in Fairfield, because like you're not growing anything in Fairfield. You know what I mean? Like, that they've already got lacrosse, they've already got teams there. But I think they're just trying to move it away from the teams. I think that's kind of what I have more of a problem with than anything in the one in Minnesota. I think having it in Fairfield is stupid. Like, you're not building new fans in Fairfield, Connecticut, dude. You know, like, go to like Des Moines, Iowa or something, you know, go somewhere where no one's seen lacrosse. And now, oh, we get to see not only the highest level of lacrosse, but the highest level of lacrosse played for stakes. You know, that's how you make fans.
That's true.
You know?
And also that's something also that I think you run into the problem with the game in LA is that there's so much competition for the entertainment dollar. And I think you've seen the NLL do a good job of success like with Saskatchewan.
Right.
There's a lot more options for ways to spend, you know, to spend a Saturday evening in LA compared to Saskatchewan.
I'm sure there is. I'm sure there are.
And so, and that's not to insult Saskatchewan, but there's very few cities in the world that have as many options as LA in terms of a way to spend, you know, to entertain yourself on a Saturday night. And it's as the sport grows, you know, it's one of those things that where sometimes the biggest population centers aren't always the best places to put teams.
Right. I would agree with that 100%.
To kind of wrap things up, or it's maybe not wrap things up, but as we start to wind down, going back a little bit to kind of the MLL action, you know, there are a couple of topics you wanted to discuss, namely who's the favorite to win it at this point.
I think everyone thinks it's Chesapeake, but I'm gonna kind of cop out here and say no one's a favorite right now. Like, we don't know. You know, I mean, it's funny. Rosie and I were talking about this the other night. Like, who, if you had a gun to your head and someone was like, you have to pick the MLB champion right now, or we're going to blow your head off. Like, we would have trouble coming up with something, and we've seen all the games. You know, I think that's great. I think that's actually something that's great about this particular season, is that it really is anyone's game. The Lizards have played like crap. Rochester has faltered and come back and then faltered again and then come back. You've got Boston and Charlotte, completely unpredictable teams, winning and losing games, seemingly with no regard for tactics or matchups, strictly reliant on transition and ability to defend transition as their main, you know, elements. And then you have Chesapeake with this completely kind of revamped roster, giving their young guys a lot of reps and pushing forward. And that's why I think a lot of people would choose Chesapeake, because they have looked good, but then they played Florida and they looked bad. I don't think they looked good. It took a two-pointer from Miles Jones and a couple of goals from Donovan in an unsettled situation. And then Matt Danowski wakes up and scores the first goal of the game, runs out of the box and fires one home to win the game. I mean, Florida was beating them up in that third quarter, and I thought they were going to win it. And I had a great tweet for Joe Walters, but apparently I still sent it out, but it would have been a lot funnier if Florida won, which was message received, Joe Walters, and then put a picture of all our picks.
Everybody picked Chesapeake. Yeah. Yeah. Everybody picked Chesapeake.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I would agree. Cause I mean, at this point, really, do you even have, is there any team even that you're confident saying is for sure going to make the playoffs?
No. Definitely not. And it's funny too, because the way the schedule is, there are teams like Boston only has two games left, you know,
in Ohio.
Yeah.
As well.
New York has four. It's wild. I mean, Florida's out. Atlanta's out. I mean, they're not mathematically quote unquote out, but Florida is mathematically out now. But you know, Denver looking sprightly. Maybe. I mean, the defense is a disaster, but if Jack Kelly has a great game, Denver can kind of beat anybody. You know, they can run with anybody. They can score with anybody. Ohio, who knows what Ohio is? Ohio was getting their butt kicked by Boston all game, and they stole it at the end because Boston couldn't, brain farted and forgot how to clear the ball and gave away two goals with intercepted passes that were just inexcusable for professional lacrosse players. But and then you have Chesapeake again. Chesapeake is great in the six. They always have been. But the question with Chesapeake is, can their transition hold up? Can their transition defense hold up? Can they not take a lot of penalties? And New York, who knows? I made this point the other night. New York hasn't played well all season. If you're in that New York locker room, there's no way you're like, yeah, man, we played great today. Ever. At any point. Even when you beat teams. They beat teams and they look like crap. You know, they beat teams on their talent.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it's something I look at when I look at the standings, goal differential, that New York is they're minus three. They've given up three more goals than they've scored.
Yeah. I'm not surprised.
Even though they're 6-4. And the same thing not as extreme, but Chesapeake is only plus six.
Yep.
They're three games above 500, but they're only plus six. Their average game result is less, they're winning by less than a goal.
Right.
In the average game, that the two, Rochester and Ohio, are the two teams that stand out. Rochester is plus 20, and Ohio is plus 23 in goal differential right now. And the other, everybody else is basically within a couple, other than Florida, is within five or six goals of even.
Yeah, and those actually would be my two teams if I was going to pick, and if the bracket shook out right. I would probably pick Ohio and Rochester to face off in the final, and I wouldn't know who to pick. You know, the Rochester defense looked like they'd never seen a pick in their life last week. It was embarrassing. They were not switching, and they have all these box players. Half their short sticks are box players, and they aren't switching on picks or forget to switch or stand still and a guy run past them. It was really bizarre watching the game, but they still pulled out a victory. So when you play like that, play sloppily, and you still win, I think that's kind of a mark of, you know, a champion almost. As damning as that is with faint praise, I think it's true. I think you know, if we're going to pick favorites, I think it's Ohio and Rochester going into these last couple weeks. But again, anything can change. This New York Rochester game is gigantic. This is a Friday night.
Yeah, that's
huge.
That's the other interesting thing about this schedule is that New York has games. Three of their four games left, though, are against. They're against top. I would say, you know, top five teams.
They're all against top five teams.
They're against Ohio,
Chesapeake, Boston.
I think they play Boston. Well, Boston is right now is in sixth,
but they're in the hunt. You know what I mean? I think that's the.
Oh yeah, you know, I mean, it's four games against teams that are in the hunt,
for sure.
But I think there's pretty clearly to us. I guess there are five teams that are either in the lead or half a game back of the league lead. That have a little bit of separation from Boston. Because Boston is a situation where they probably have to win out to get in.
Oh, they definitely have to win out to get in. That's 100%. They need that, and they need some tiebreaks as well. Which is, by the way, what the position... I feel like Boston's in this position every year. It's like, well, we got to win out, and we got to get tiebreaks, okay. And then they either make it or they don't. Having two games left is a huge disadvantage, I think. Who else has two games left? Denver?
Ohio. It puts Ohio in a decent position. They're one of two teams with seven wins.
Yeah, if they beat New York, they get New York's tiebreaker too. They'll have this sweep on the series, and their only other game is against Atlanta, and Atlanta's going to be rolling over and expecting someone to rub their belly by, you know, July 30th. So, you know, I think you got a lot of teams here. There's a lot of potential for upsets as well. I just think this week the marquee matchup is Rochester, New York. Again, and actually news about that game. Let's transition to talking about that game real quick, because this game is being streamed on Facebook on Paul Rabel's page.
I want to know
your reaction to that when you heard that. Like, what was your initial reaction when you heard that news?
So my initial reaction was a combination of that's good news and that's really interesting news. Like, I did not expect that to have that happen. It makes sense when you think about it. It makes sense about why it happened. That I think Paul Rabel, in addition to being the great lacrosse player that he is very much, is very tech savvy, very entrepreneurial minded. And so I think the fact that he had the idea to put a game on Facebook Live, it makes complete sense. And the fact that he... you know, had the business savvy to pull it off and get it done is also not surprising. But it's just, and it's good news. I think it's great news because I think that live streaming of sports via sort of social media sites is definitely the future. That it just makes so much sense on so many levels.
Well, sure. You saw the NFL deal with Twitter as well. I mean,
oh, which I think is, that's something I actually have, as soon as they announced that, I wondered why, I thought it made so much sense. I wish that that one of the lacrosse leagues would have been out in front of that.
Yeah.
Because I think it would have made for, to me, if I'm Twitter, I don't want to debut, like, sports streaming on Twitter with the NFL, because if you screw it up, you don't have any chance for feedback before it, like, is in the national spotlight. And I thought doing a couple of MLL games this summer would have been a perfect way to, as kind of like a trial run for both. It would have put the MLL in front of more people who have never seen it, who just wanted to check it out to see the Twitter integration. And it would have been great for Twitter to get a chance with sort of a very low stakes situation. But anyways, that didn't happen. So there's not a whole ton of use of talking about it, but, so I think it's great for the league to put it in front of people, and I think Facebook is a place where it will be put in front of people who don't usually watch MLL games. Will end up watching this because of where it is. But I think it's interesting. I use that word. I think it's curious that it ended up being Paul Rabel's Facebook page that the game is being shown on, and not the league or not LSN or not anywhere else.
Well, LSN's producing it, and you can actually still watch it on LSN. If you want.
Right. No,
if
no, you no, want. That's expected. I mean, it's a partnership with LSN. I guess, and it makes sense. I actually did some checking. Do you have any Any guesses on who has more Facebook likes on their Facebook page, Paul Rabil or the league?
I don't need to guess. I know Paul Rabil has more. He has more followers.
It's pretty close. It's pretty close.
Really?
No, it's about Paul Rabil. When I check, I'm recalling this, but Paul Rabil had just over 80,000, and the MLL, I believe, was a couple hundred shy of 70,000.
Okay.
When I looked. So it's 80,000 versus 70,000. They're right. Is for all intents and purposes, really close.
Yeah. And I think
I'm not sure it's enough to make a difference in choosing it.
Well, 10,000 people is a lot when you're talking about that kind of sample size. So,
no, I mean, potentially, but at the same time, then you're attracting them. It's just, I mean, how, like, in 10 years, is the MLL going to be streaming games on Paul Rabil's Facebook page still?
I mean, if he owns a team, maybe. I don't know. Probably not.
That's true. That's true. I don't want to doubt Paul Rabil's that Paul Rabil will find a way to have pro lacrosse streaming on his.
I just had a really scary image when you asked me that, and it was like Dave Gross and Paul Rabil merged into a human and just pounding their hand on their desk, being like, "Of course, it's going on my page." But sorry, I just wanted to put that image out in everyone's brain listening to this. If you've met both those guys, it's hilarious.
I'm struggling to wrap my head around what a Paul Rabil, Dave Gross hybrid person would look like.
Oh, I got it. It's pretty funny.
Okay, I'll trust you.
Just trust me.
I trust you on that one. I don't know. I don't want to continue to try to imagine.
No. All right. So now we're talking about teams, the road to the playoffs.
Wait, you gotta go back. What was your reaction to
I was happy. You know, Facebook has the largest user base. It's a great opportunity for a lot of fans that have never seen the MLL to sample it, to stumble upon it, if you will, if you're just on Facebook and you see like this streaming thing. Coincidentally, I think the weekend before, do you follow your international soccer at all? A little bit, like teams?
Not enough to know where you're going with this or be able
okay.
to answer
so,
whatever you're about to
this
say.
This Italian team in Serie A called Roma, out of Rome, streamed one of their scrimmages on Facebook Live, and it was in English, and they had great... I don't know who produced it, but I watched like 20 minutes of it, and I'm not a Roma fan at all. I just kind of was like, oh, this is cool that it's like randomly in my feed. How did this get in my feed? And it was great to watch for a couple minutes. So hopefully Facebook gives it, you know, gives this MLL opportunity a little space to breathe and maybe pushes it out to anyone that's liked lacrosse and their algorithm, however that works. I think that would be really cool to bring in new people. But, you know, I just hope they have the best team announcing it, and I hope they have not the regular Rochester announcers. No shade meant, but I hope that it's, you know, I hope it's Quint and Wash. I hope it's Quint Washburn. I really do. Or Eamon and Kark. You know, I hope it's one of those two teams calling the game. I am not sure who it is, but I hope it's, you know, those two teams. I was not happy with the amount of knowledge or the incorrect knowledge that was dropped this past weekend when Rochester beat Charlotte, and I made, you know, no bones about it on Twitter. This is where you go, Kyle, you're mean. Stop being mean.
Oh.
Stop being mean, Kyle.
I mean, I don't...
Go ahead.
I think you can be mean to adults who are getting paid money.
Yeah, okay.
You are being mean, but I think...
Okay.
That's where I draw the line. That's a big thing to me. I think if you're an adult and you're getting paid money for doing something... that criticism is part of that you need to be able to handle.
Yeah.
When you're talking about kids who are not being paid, then I'll tell you that you're being mean and you need to stop. But
good. Save it for a committed
account.
I'm going to need you.
Oh.
Make sure you're ready.
You're going to be mean to those kids?
No.
Okay.
No, but you need to tell me if I am, because I clearly just don't know when I'm doing it. It's really my problem. I don't have emotions.
No, I think you do. I think you do. You do, you just don't care.
That's fair. So getting back to kind of pushing it forward, we're wrapping up a little bit with MLL. We're looking forward here. We kind of teased it a little bit. You know, I picked my final. Tell me your four teams that you think are making the playoffs. Go ahead. And your rationale for each one in Make one point about each team you're picking.
No, I don't like to. I don't really like to do picks.
I hate doing picks. I do them every week. I'm just asking you to do it.
Stay away from them. I think it's gonna be just. I mean, mathematically, the odds just say I would think that Chesapeake, Rochester, Charlotte, and Ohio.
Okay.
Because those are the teams that are ahead in the standings right now, and along with New York, but New York has by far the hardest schedule left.
That's true.
They're going to have the hardest time coming by those seventh and eighth wins that you're probably going to need to get in. Because right, I mean, 8-6 is almost certainly what it's going to take.
Yes, I would think so.
To get into the playoffs. And so you're looking at Ohio has to go 1-1. They beat Atlanta, they're in.
Yeah.
And you have similar situations. Chesapeake has to win one of their remaining three games.
And their last game is Charlotte, is in Charlotte against Charlotte. So that could be a game that knocks Charlotte out, by the way. I think Charlotte needs to win both these Outlaws games. Both games against the Outlaws.
Right. Well, Charlotte is another team with four left. Charlotte has to go 2-2. Rochester, Charlotte, New York are all in a situation. They have four games left, and they probably need to go 2-2 to get in.
And going 2-2 is a lot easier than going 2-0, right? I mean, you got cushion.
Right. And that's the situation that Boston probably has to go 2-0.
Oh, they definitely have to go 2-0. Probably has to go. I don't think that's a question.
Well, I think there's a situation where you could end up with multiple teams tied at 7-7. You could end up with a three-way tie. Teams 4, 5, and 6 are all tied at 7-7, and then one of those teams...
Yeah, because there has to be tiebreakers, and each, you know, there's still tiebreakers to be determined. Because if you're going head-to-head, it's, you know, series, you know, each team, you play each team twice. So if you're Boston, and you beat... Boston already lost to Ohio, so they're actually in a bad spot. They've lost they lost the season series to Ohio. But if Boston beats, you know, who do they have left? Boston has Florida.
But if
left?
You're talking, but I think you're talking about though a tiebreaker to get in at 7-7. Unless I don't know if there could be a tie at 8-6 to get into that last.
Yeah, Boston can't win any more tiebreakers though because they just have Florida and New York left. So they don't get a sweep.
Because you have basically it would take. I think you would need Atlanta in Florida, like in Denver, to lose out to have five teams that are 8-6.
Yeah, no, I actually don't think that's going to happen. I think they're going to steal a couple games.
Or the other way, you could maybe have where you have like five teams that end up at 8-6.
Yes, very realistic.
That might be possible. Yeah. That might be possible. And actually, yeah, then we talk about that. That is probably pretty realistic that there's going to be maybe three or four teams that are end up at 8-6.
I mean, that's...
So maybe 8-6 doesn't get
Isn't that kind of the definition of parity in a league? I mean, you know, there's really only two teams that are out now, and we only have a couple more weeks. That's pretty great for any sport, right?
Oh, I think absolutely. And really, I guess Atlanta is... Atlanta would have to hope for that 7-7.
Atlanta's out.
Like a three-way tie at 7-7. I
discount them wholly and totally. Bye-bye. Especially after they fire their coach and have no one to play X and look terrible.
Yeah, I think the odds that they win four in a row are... Just the odds of winning four in a row are against them. Against
I mean, they're playing Ohio and Rochester in those last two games. Good luck, man. No way. I mean, no one can afford to rest players, which I think is great. I can't remember the last time we were like... not debating which team would rest players in the last couple weeks. You know, it was the Rattlers and the Lizards last year and the year before that as well. It was Denver 2 years ago. Like, are they going to rest this guy? Is that going to help? Is it not going to help? So I think, you know, at least that narrative is gone. I hate that narrative in sports. I think it's just garbage. I can't stand it.
Which also in a league where they're only playing once a week, and you have just especially funny contrasted to all the high school recruiting tournaments where teams are playing, you know, eight games in three days.
Oh, yeah. Well, with this schedule, some teams like Florida is playing twice in the same week, like three times this year, which is insane.
Oh, well, the cancellation with that game that got rained out, or isn't somebody playing back-to-back?
Yeah, it was
Friday,
a lightning
Saturday.
Out. Yeah, it's actually Charlotte is playing back-to-back this week. So, and by the way, in the picks we did today, guys, it's in the first paragraph. It's addressed. Okay, we all picked Charlotte like when the game was going to happen, and we're not going back to pick new games. Okay, just it's Charlotte. Everyone picked Charlotte. They win, we look good. They lose, we look bad. That's how it goes.
Speaking of Charlotte, too, I want to give a shout out to Brendan Fowler and Brian for
I the saw that camp. They hooked you up.
They did hook me up. They did hook me up. And I have strung it up with some mystery mesh that I stole from the IL gear stringing supplies. That's probably left over from when Casey ran it.
I'm sure it is.
And I have been testing it out, and it's the fill in sidewall hole like you talked about is a little bit weird, but I've been enjoying it. It's a higher flex point than a lot of other face off heads, which gives it it's the stiff throat that they talk about with the head, which I think that's what I have heard. A face off guy has told me that when you talk about the head, that if it gets in the throat there, you got no chance and you got to go to a
counter. Which one is your favorite out of the stiffer or the weaker one? More flexible, not weaker. Sorry, so Brian.
I feel like they're really they're not broken in yet, I would say. So it's a little tough for me to pick. I need to do some more face offs against air by myself. Either that or I was thinking about, would it be weird to go ask the sixth grader down the street to face off against me?
It might be if he's like 4 feet tall. That'd be weird.
He is, I've played lacrosse catch with him before, so.
Okay. I don't know. You're not allowed to body him out. You can only do the first part of the face off.
I need to do some live reps against somebody who's my skill level. So that's I was thinking he was a good candidate.
That's probably a good place to start, as always. I think that's gonna wrap it up for this edition of the Patrick and Kyle podcast. Have we decided on off topic or no? Are we not gonna do that?
I think we really that's something we need to discuss. We need to buckle down at this point and just pick a name.
Either way, guys that are listening, gals that are listening, thanks for listening. You can find more of my work on InsideTheCross.com. Or find me on Twitter at @thekyledevitt, KYLEDEVITTE on Twitter, and also on Instagram, but my Instagram's really boring. Patrick, where can people find more of your work on the interwebs?
I am at LaxFilmRoom on Twitter and Snapchat, and at LacrosseFilmRoom on Instagram and YouTube.
Great.
And Vine. But I already have a lot of social media followers, Kyle.
So you don't need more?
I don't. I don't know that I need to get any more. So.
Well, I do. So follow me.
Yes, you should follow Kyle. Follow Kyle. Anyways, we will talk to you guys next week.